Welcome to this virtual lunch hosted by Pembroke on the topic of managing wealth during uncertain times with a focus on fixed income. My name is Ian Aiken, managing partner of Pembroke. The purpose of this call is to provide insights that will be of help to you during these turbulent times and to share with you how we are positioning the portfolios for the eventual recovery of the economy and the markets. The pandemic has had a dramatic and rapid impact on financial markets and on our day-to-day lives. And I hope that you and your family stay safe and healthy during this challenging time. While most businesses in Quebec and Ontario and across North America and around the world have been told to close, I can report that Pembroke remains very much open for business. As a financial services firm, we are deemed to be an essential service, but with social distancing in place, all of us are now working from home. This is going much better than we could have hoped for, and we are operating at 100% in terms of our ability to conduct research, manage the portfolios, access our systems, meet with each other, and service our clients. I can share with you that I, along with other partners at Pembroke, have been putting fresh money into the funds that we manage. Why would we do that now? Because we remain confident in the long-term wealth creation opportunities offered by the companies that we invest in. Finally, I can share with you that we have also reassured our staff that no layoffs are planned in 2020. With that update, I would now like to turn the microphone over to Richard Usher-Jones, who is a portfolio manager at Canso Investment Council, who are the sub-advisors for the GBC Corporate Bond Fund and the GBC Canadian Bond Fund. Richard, who is known to many of you, will make some opening remarks and then answer questions that have been submitted via email. I now turn the microphone over to Richard.
Portfolio managers at Canso
is now joining
from mainland China. Much unknown of their families are still back is in now China. Exiting. And very early on in the pandemic, they let us know how serious this is or this could be, and that this could very well make its way over to North America. And it was in the mid part of January that we went about a process of actually testing our pandemic or testing our business resumption process, which meant that every single one of us had an opportunity to work from home for a solid week and remote in and use WebEx.
Arnold Zidolka.
So safe to say,
is now joining.
Now we have a skeleton unknown staff
participant is now joining
us, just to make sure that it's still there, actually. But we're fully up and running and operating remotely. And it's actually been a far more seamless transition than I think any of us would have expected.
Douglas J.P. Crane.
You know, when you're
is now exiting
cancer or entrusting us to manage some of your money, you're relying on the insight of our investment team, and that's 27 people doing the bottom-up focused research. And you know, I think for those of you that have heard me speak over the last couple of years, we've been talking at Canso how for the last couple of years, you really have not been compensated for assuming credit risk. And that means that if you've been investing in less credit-worthy bonds issued by less credit-worthy companies,
Boris Moylan
is now joining.
Similarly, you weren't protected. When we evaluate every investment, we look at what's the yield we're getting paid, and if things don't work out as planned, what provisions do we have? What covenants and protections are there for us as a bondholder to recover that investment? And in the environment that up until about a month and a half or 2 months ago that we were in, it was
Jordy
pretty
Murray.
Hard. Money was unbelievably cheap.
Is now joining.
And because we hadn't seen any defaults and any real problems in the market, investors were sort of oblivious to the risk and really, you know, in our view, sticking their necks out to
Russell Hiscock.
Much less credit-worthy investments than they should have been. In that environment, you know, we transitioned the portfolio to be in much higher quality
investments.
And I have to say,
is now exiting.
That set us up to be in, I think, a pretty favorable position today, that we think we've done a pretty good job understanding we run people safe money of protecting capital going into this environment, because this is an environment where there are some tremendous opportunities that we think we're going to be able to take advantage of to assemble within the portfolio. it's interesting though, causing the, you know, that stretch for yield, people dipping into lower quality investments.
Is now
the other dangerous thing that we've also seen is many investors have employed leverage. So not only, you know, not being satisfied with the yield they're getting in some bonds, they've gone to
unknown participant is now exiting
more in some of these investments. And you know, what's happened is, you know, the market has become quite illiquid. And I'm sure that's a term that many of you have heard over the last couple of weeks. And there's, it's almost a perfect storm is what's come about. With COVID-19, there's a lot of unknowns, still a lot of unknowns out there. If you're managing a business and you're worried about what your future business prospects are gonna look like for the next while, what do? Well, you approach the bank and you completely draw down your line of credit. So that's what many, many businesses have done, and actually many individuals as well. What does that do? That depletes the banking system of a lot of the money and the resources they have. I talked about some of those leverage.
Yolande Martin.
And this is individuals
is now who joining.
Don't just go out and buy a bond. They buy a bond, they borrow more money and buy more bonds. So they've bought more than the actual monies they have. And it's that deleveraging that's happening in the system right now. The other thing that's also new in this environment, new this time, is the amount of money that is in index products and ETFs or exchange traded funds. And in our view, as there's a rush for the exits, the amount of money that's in those products is really exacerbating and exaggerating the lack of buyers and the illiquidity. And I think the other thing you also have to remember is this is quite an unnerving time for a lot of people, including those in the investment business. A lot of the trading desks at the banks who trade most of the bonds that go into portfolios are also separated. They used to sit together, but typically what all these organizations have done is they've moved half their staff to an offsite location and the other half has stayed onsite. So the person you'd been bouncing ideas off of is no longer right beside you. They're at quite a distance. So it's been quite an interesting period. I have to say though, that on the Canso side, we are pretty comfortable with the fact that we've assembled a lot of very high quality positions in the portfolio, which has, you know, should allow us to weather through this storm, but also more importantly, put us in a pretty good position to take advantage of some of the opportunities
is now
that are presenting themselves. So Ian, hopefully that gives you a bit of an idea of where we are. Maybe pass it to you. I know you had some questions. Sorry, Ian, I think you might be muted.
I think I'm back now. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Richard, for those opening remarks. We have a number of questions here submitted by clients, and we'll run through those and try and make this a little interactive. So, first question: how has the sudden stop in global economic activity and the massive fiscal and monetary response been factored into your analysis as bond fund managers?
Well, you know, we evaluate every investment in light of the shock. So that's the existing portfolio of investments. And you know how you know the two big measures, which is first the pandemic itself and also the monetary stimulus, how they will affect each one of the businesses. And you know, certainly there are some that are going to be impacted quite negatively. But I also, you know, and you know, some of those, certainly the travel industry, the restaurant business, it's almost like a void and air pocket going through those particular businesses. And the real unknown is when they will get back to normal. And when business will resume. But I'd also say there are some businesses that will do very well in this environment. And you know, we're looking
at telcos
is now joining.
You got to think that this is not an environment when someone's going to cut their Cogeco, Rogers, or Bell services. And if it's like the credit crisis, it's an environment where a lot of people are going to upgrade their cable packages, thinking, well, I'm not going out, I'm going to spend a lot more time at home. And, you know, so those are businesses that we think will do well, as well grocery retailers. If any of you have been in a grocery store, it's amazing how empty the shelves are. And actually in Ontario, I didn't go in. I looked in the window of the LCBO, the liquor store, your SAQ. Those are also doing pretty good business because no one's buying drinks or no one's buying food out at restaurants. They're all buying food, bringing it home.
Brian Nunnally
at home,
is now joining.
Bottles of wine at home. So there's, you know, it's factoring that in, these two shocks, and updating all your modeling on your businesses and your expectations. Some will do be very negatively impacted, but also there are some businesses that are really going to benefit from this.
Thank you. Next question. How have the characteristics of the bond funds changed due to the pandemic? And for example, how has the year to maturity changed during March?
You know, Ian, I don't think I've seen such a rapid change in some of the characteristics in the funds ever. The increase in yield spread, so the additional yield that you're getting today by investing in corporate bonds has increased. That's had an impact increasing the yield in the fund. But we've also been very active using our liquidity to buy some really attractive bonds. And so the yield has gone from a level of about 2.8% about a month ago up to a level approaching 6%. And the duration hasn't moved very much. It's gone from about 1.2 years to just inside of 2 years.
Okay, thank you. The stock market is down because of the economic impact of the virus, but why do you think financial markets have been so volatile?
Robert Urbasic.
That's an interesting question. I think it sort of leads to some of my opening comments on the fact that this is a bit of a perfect storm. Volatility is, you know, what's happening, cutting straight to the chase, is there are way more willing sellers than there are willing buyers. So you've got gapping in prices on the way down, and there's a real lack of liquidity. I talked about how the banks as backstops aren't really there. Every single line of credit has been drawn by every business almost immediately, instantaneously. There's panic selling that's happening out there. And I mentioned all of those leveraged buyers are likely getting margin calls, and they're being forced to sell into this weakness as well. And all of this is also being exaggerated by the new entrants in the last decade to the market, which are those entities of ETFs and index funds. And I think all of this is combining together to really create a significant amount of volatility. You know, that, and I think, you know, volatility is not just the market going down, right? It's also prices going up. And the announcement of all of these stimulus packages happening globally, but significant ones in the US and in Canada, is causing a lot of those upside swings as well. Creating a healthy floor and foundation to some of those price levels.
Yeah. So given that you are fully invested, how does Canso take advantage of the decline in markets? Said another way, how do you go on the offensive during a time of crisis?
So you're right. We don't carry cash, particularly in the last few years, because you don't get paid anything if you own cash in a portfolio. But as I mentioned, when you're not paid to take risk, we'll migrate to something that is very, very high quality, where we're still collecting a yield while we're waiting for opportunities to present themselves. And the categories of bonds that we've owned in the portfolio, number one, we've owned about 18% in NHA MBS. That stands for National Housing Association Mortgage-Backed Securities, which are AAA rated. They're guaranteed by the federal government, principal and interest. So they're very high quality. And the benefit of owning those is they pay us more than cash. We get some additional yield, but they're very high quality and very liquid. The other category of bonds that we've owned is, and some of you may have heard me talk about these before, but they're covered bonds issued by the Canadian banks. So not only are we backed by the covenant of the bank, say Royal Bank, Bank of Nova Scotia, CIBC, TD, we're also backed by an identified pool of assets that we have prior charge on. So those are also AAA rated. And it's having these very high quality securities in a period like this where there is panic that those panicked investors retreat to things that are very solid and stable, which are those AAA rated government guaranteed NHA MBS, and also that liquidity category that we've got in the bank covered bonds. So those are very liquid positions that we've been able to sell down to take advantage of the opportunities.
Thank you. I guess you've touched on ETFs before, but how important is active management at times like these?
I think active management is important all the time because we're kind of deep rooted in the beliefs of active management. But certainly, this is not a time you want to just be following the herd. And the herd right now is running from products. And, you know, particularly in ETF and index products, when things are going well, you're systematically buying more of what's going up and you're almost pushing those prices up. And the opposite's also true when you're selling an ETF or an index fund, you're pushing the prices lower and lower. And indexing, while it may have some validity in buying, say, large cap stocks, it makes no sense whatsoever when you're buying credit or debt instruments. And just a you know a quick explanation of that is, if a particular stock is doing well in an index and you're buying that index fund, that means the weight of that company is increasing in the index, so you own more. That kind of makes sense on the equity side. On the debt side, to become a bigger part of the index, a company has to issue more debt. So you're almost systematically being overweighted the most indebted companies, which in an environment like this, you want to be overweighted to the companies that have the least amount of debt.
Yep. Another question here. How is the current situation different than 1929?
It's interesting. You know, we read a couple of books as an investment team at Canso recently about the dynamics and the types of products that brought about some of the crash in 1929. But I'd say some of the difference today, there's more leverage in the system. ETFs, index products, fast, rapid trading, algorithmic trading that happens. It can step in and exaggerate those trends. And, you know, much more complex corporate structures in the research that's required to really understand some of the underlying investments. So it's...
unknown participant is now joining.
So those are some differences in the structure of the market, but how about the kind of responses that we're seeing from central banks and governments?
Well, you know, the responses we're seeing today are unprecedented. The amount of liquidity being put in the system, I mean, the Canadian government's basically buying, they've announced they've got a program to buy insured mortgages, actually, which is providing some great liquidity for our NHA MBS. And they're also have another program starting to buy actually covered bonds starting early next week. And in the U.S., they basically announced they're buying anything that's investment grade. And to be honest, I don't think we have ever seen such measures of liquidity injected into the system.
Yeah. Clients are wondering about the liquidity of the corporate bond market. How does it compare to, say, the liquidity of the stock market, and how has it changed because of the pandemic?
So I always kind of go back to the fundamentals, and you know, market prices of securities are supposed to be priced based on all available information. And with this pandemic, that is a significant piece of new information.
Is now exiting.
And with it also comes, I'd say, more questions than answers. How long is this going to go on for? And what the impact is going to be? So you know, all these prices are being reset. And the term that is being used quite a bit that you know we use in the debt side is price discovery. As new price levels are found, you see smaller volumes when something was worth X on one day, and 10 days later, even though it hasn't traded, it's trying to find a new price level that makes sense. And that's that price discovery that's happened. And then stimulus packages come into play. This is another big new significant piece of information, providing a support or floor for some businesses. And you know the difference in all of this between bond trading and equity trading is equity trading, I would say, is quite transparent. Everyone trades on the exchange, and you can see the bid and ask spreads, and it's all, and you can see the prices and you can see the volumes. Bond trading is really not as transparent. There are some online trading portals that we can use and trading systems, but much is done through dealer bond desks, which is negotiated transactions. So it's the liquidity can be quite different in finding liquidity in the bond market than the equity market.
Thanks. So now if I combine a few questions that we received sort of on the same theme, what can we learn from the great financial crisis of 2008 and 2009 to help us now? And more specifically, post 2008 and 2009, Canso posted some exceptional returns in corporates. Are you drawing similarities to what we are facing now to that period? And if you read John Carswell's recent letter, he's suggesting that it's now a great time to buy corporate bonds.
We think it's an amazing time to be buying corporate bonds. That sounds a bit self-interested, but I mean, you mentioned you guys are buying, making investments in your own portfolios. We're doing exactly the same thing at Canso. You know, there are definitely some similarities between what's going on now, the financial shock, and what's going on now. You know, that was very focused. The downside was on financial services and on the banks. And now it's a different category of bonds altogether. You know, we think the banks are even though they're tight on liquidity now, solvency is not an issue. So we've got a stable banking system. But we're seeing certainly different types of bonds trade at very similar prices to what we saw in 2008 and 2009.
And back then, I remember corporate spreads blew out to a very wide level. Where are we now?
So high yield bonds had the biggest jump out, and I think they went to spread levels of 2000. And at that peak level, you don't see a lot of trade out there, but you know, if you look at
Chevalier,
you look at the last couple of days, and we've seen high yield spreads on average out at levels of about 1,000. So, and to give you some context there, so high yield bonds trading at yield spreads of 1,000. So that's 10% over the risk-free rate, the Government of Canada bond or a U.S. Treasury bond. Not that long ago, about a month ago, they were at about 3.5%. So there's been a significant move in a very, very short period of time.
Yeah. Maybe you don't want to answer this question, but what would you predict the U.S. 10-year to be yielding in 1 year's time? It's currently around 0.85, I think.
Okay, well, I predict that I'll be wrong in my prediction. I know that's not much help, but maybe I'll give you some insight on the path. You know, we think that based on the amount of stimulus that's coming, we're going to get through this. It's going to take some pretty extreme measures. There's, we call it an air pocket, a void is going to go through the economy. Right now, we don't know how long it's going to last. How long is it going to take businesses to resume and get back to normal? Once that happens, and the stimulus is supposed to provide a cushion to get us through that, we're probably going to go through a period of deflation. Deflation is where things are cheaper as things get up and running and the market stabilizes again. But our view is down the road, the amount of stimulus, the amount of money that's being put in the economy is going to create potentially a wildfire of inflation. And which means that yields on bonds are going to be climbing quite significantly in the future.
That's a tough environment to be a bond investor in, isn't it?
Well, yeah, on average, if yields are rising, bond prices are declining. You know, certainly having a short duration like we do, certainly within the corporate bond fund, and a significantly shorter duration as well within the GBC Canadian bond fund, will protect during those types of environments. And there's a number of instruments that we can buy that actually benefit from the appreciating yields. And I have to say, it's going to be a if we're right in this, it's going to be an environment once again where if you've amassed some savings, you're actually going to get paid without assuming a lot of risk. We're going to get inflation back in the system, but there should be some healthy bond yields again in that environment. And also this massive amount of debt that we're creating, the thought has always been we're going to be able to service the debt by keeping rates low. The other way you make a significant debt load serviceable is you get inflation, which includes wage inflation. So your ability to pay down that debt is that much greater.
So the portfolios have been positioned for some time for rising rates. You might finally be right in that positioning. Is that right?
Yeah. I think, our positioning over the last couple of years has been one defensive in the event of rising rates, but also very high quality. I'd say we're batting 50% there. We would have been better off having more duration, but certainly we're very happy with the stance of quality we have in the portfolio.
Good. Here's another question. Is Canso seeing significant inflows or outflows
into its participant
strategies?
Is now joining.
Are institutional clients increasing or decreasing their fixed income exposure at this time?
So I'd say we've seen a bit of both. Initially, going back, last week or the last 10
Haiti
days.
Haiti Williams.
We were seeing some redemptions, and the redemptions were as a result of investors following their investment policy statement.
That said, Jim Wingrove.
A specific
is
asset
now
mix,
exiting.
Say it's 60% stocks and 40% bonds. And with the equity market activity and dropping, that meant that those asset mixes were very much out of whack. So our clients were telling us very directly, hey, we need to rebalance. So we need some liquidity from the bond fund or the bond investment to invest back in equities. So we did see some redemptions, but I'd say this week we're seeing a lot of strategic allocations come in and buys come into our credit funds and our corporate bond funds to take advantage of the wider spreads and the attractive yields that are available. And that momentum really seems to be picking up.
Thank you. Another question. The credit rating agencies, S&P and Moody's, received a lot of negative press during 2008 and 2009 for their lack of due diligence on issuers. Have the rating agencies cleaned up their acts? And how much reliance does Canso place on outside ratings when they're assessing risk?
We don't put any emphasis on the external rating agencies. That's just someone else's opinion. And we also think a fairly kind of potentially conflicted opinion. But I'd say, how have they changed from the credit crisis? If anything,
Russell,
the rating agencies are
is
like
now
more
exiting.
Negative than they used to be. So when in doubt, they're gonna notch something down into credit rating. While we don't care and we don't look at what the rating agencies do, we are quite aware of it and we use that to our advantage. As an example, there's a bond that we've been buying in your portfolio for last number of months that it's been rated at one level, and our view is it actually should be rated quite a bit lower. But even at the lower rating that we've been using at Canso, it's, we think, a very attractive bond, very attractive price. But based on the sentiment, it's been trading at very attractive prices, and we continue to buy it. So long and short of this, we use those rating agencies and the movement to the benefit of our investors. Oftentimes, if a bond gets downgraded, there are investors that just they have to sell it. They're not permitted to continue to hold a bond that may have been notched down by a credit rating agency. So it's something we don't use it in our analysis.
Is now
we
exiting.
Use them to the advantage of our investors in our portfolio management.
Thank you. So another question: when Canso assesses the attractiveness of any given bond, they calculate what they're likely to recover in the event of a default. How confident are you in the maximum loss recovery calculations that you conducted in the past, given the scale of the current
is
shutdown?
Is now exiting.
Yeah, so our max loss, just a quick view of that, whenever we invest
Stephen
in a
Lipper.
Bond, we do our
is
analysis.
Now exiting.
We look at the business and we assess a Canso rating, which is the dependability of the cash flows, and it's really a probability of default. But you know, if an issuer defaults, that doesn't really tell you how much money you might lose or how much you might recover. And for that analysis, we use our maximum loss that says in the event of default, how much money might we lose? So I guess, Ian, your question is, and I maybe adjusted a bit, given this new information and the pandemic and the response and the business interruption, as an analyst, it's our job to review and revisit all of the rankings and loss and research that we've done and to reevaluate that. And, you know, certainly it hasn't really impacted a lot of the existing issues.
Unknown
that we own,
participant is now joining.
But it's a significant input into everything we're looking at that is coming forward as potential opportunities to put into the portfolio.
Because certainly if you had to, if a bond went into default and you had to look at the underlying value of
Bill
the asset,
Kathy Albino,
the ability to realize on those assets now would be quite difficult.
Yeah, but I'd say, you know, you always predict that in the event of default, your recovery is going to be pretty limited. So it's, you know, whenever there's a range of recovery on a potential asset, we always take the lowest value in that range.
Okay. Next question. Can you give an example of a bond that has fallen precipitously yet has more than enough cash?
Is now exiting.
More than enough cash to weather the next year?
Yeah, you know, one that comes to mind, which, you know, the great thing about this business, and I'm sure you'd agree, you guys over at Pembroke, is that you're always learning. Coming into this, we've owned a bond and have had a significant weight in the portfolios of Apple. So Apple, I think many of us own Apple products. Actually, I'm talking to you on an Apple iPad, and we talked yesterday on my iPhone. And this is a company that the bonds are down about 4%. And to me, that makes no sense whatsoever. I would rather own Apple, frankly, than a Government of Canada bond. And why? Apple has, they have more cash on their balance sheet than they do debt outstanding. And yet the bonds are down 4%
Ron Green.
Price.
Is now exiting.
To me, that makes no sense. Yet you get an unbelievable rally in a Government of Canada bond and a U.S. Treasury. You tell me who has more debt or cash.
You're always now exiting.
And you know, when I look at a bond like that, that's one thing that makes no sense to me. We would have thought coming into this period, it would have been rock solid and a great diversifier. Certainly. Only being down 4% in this environment is relative performance is quite strong, but to me that makes no sense.
Okay. We see examples now in the economy of landlords giving breaks to their tenants, banks not charging mortgage payments as we get through this pandemic. Do you expect that bondholders will be expected to delay the receipt of interest or forgive debt payments?
You know what we love about corporate bonds is when you buy a corporate bond, it comes with basically a contract, an agreement between you and the issuer, and it lays out all the provisions, protections, and one of the things that you look for when you're analyzing the bond is it identifies events of default, and if it typically an event of default is if an issuer misses an interest payment. So I would think it would be highly unlikely that we could see that rule change. In order for those rules to get changed, as a bondholder, we'd have to agree to that change. And, you know, the reason I say that's why we like corporate bonds, governments create their own new rules. The Government of Canada could say, hey, we're taking a holiday on all our interest payments and all our bonds. Or you've seen this in European countries. All these bonds are issued at par. Well, hey, they're only worth 60 cents now. And that's why, in many ways, I think investing in corporate bonds is a great thing because you're backed by that contract.
Okay. Now we have the last question that I got from clients, and it's from a distinguished professor. It says, I have a question that focuses on the post-pandemic period. Given the very low interest rates that have prevailed for some time and the flood of liquidity currently being created in the US and Canada, I wonder how, once normal conditions return, holders of fixed income securities can avoid capital losses when central banks begin to soak up liquidity to fight inflation. So this is really a question focusing on what happens after we get through the pandemic.
Yeah, so, you know, I think we've alluded to this, but what I love about this question is we're already on to the next crisis. And, you know, I'd say it's going to take some time to get through this, but the next crisis could be one of duration and rising interest rates and rising yields. You know, we have worried even before the stimulus packages that have been put in place came into be, that the amount of growth and inflationary pressures in the market were significant and were going to result in significant inflation down the road. And what's going on now in these stimulus packages means that, you know, I mentioned it before, we could really be creating a wildfire of inflation. And that, I think, you know, we've talked about it at Canso, that we could see a crisis in duration.
Okay. So that's the list of questions that we got from clients. With the technology that we have right now, we're not able to let clients ask questions live without unmuting everybody, which would be noisy. So we are working on improving our technology platform going forward, and we will figure out how to ensure that we don't have the list of everybody or the names of everybody audible to all participants when they join the call and when they leave the call. So with that, I'd like to thank Richard Usher-Jones for sharing his insights with us. I hope that our clients have found this call to be helpful. There will be a replay available on our website, and we are going to have another Pembroke virtual lunch this coming Monday at
is
noon.
Now when exiting. Unknown participant is now exiting.
When we'll hear from Andy Flynn, who's the portfolio manager at William Blair, who will share some of his international perspective with us. So I thank you all for joining us today and for your continued confidence in management during this tumultuous time. Thank you very much.
Exiting.
Have a great day. Stay safe.
Multiple
Thanks.
People are now exiting.
Thank you. Multiple